Okay, so actually, so today I'm going to start us off with a little bit of an overview of what we saw so far in our analysis of the Sugya of Hezekriah. I want to just call attention to several broad themes and one way of charting out some of the main principles. After that, I want to come back to the end of the Rabbi Lam article and talk a little bit about the underlying value that might explain halachically why Hezekriah is protected against, okay, or why the halacha protects the privacy through your privacy through Hezekriah. Okay, so I think the first important question to ask is whether privacy itself, again through the prism of Hezekriah, is a value at all in halacha. So what would you guys say just from seeing our sugya? What would you say? Is privacy a value? So we saw a lot of makoros that say yes, clearly. But what do you do with the fact that there's two deos in the Gemara about Hezek, Riyah Shmei Hezek, or Lav Shmei Hezek? So this is the first question we began with in the Shiurim, is whether the Manda Amar Hezek, Riyah, Lav Shmei Hezek denies that privacy is a value in Jewish law altogether. Now, I think there's a way to maybe finesse the view of Hezekriah Lav Shmei Hezek to say that it's not a value. Right? I think that's at least a possibility. The question then is, what do you do if there's actually two deos about this principle in the Gemara? So like, imagine a debate where you say, someone says, well, the Rambam paskins that murder is usur. So you see that life is an important value. But then you look and you see, well, it's really two deos in the Gemara about whether murder is usur, right? Good thing we paskin like the Rambam based off some principle of following Rove. But the fact that there's a dispute about it seems to diminish the importance of the underlying principle. Right, guys? I mean, so I think somebody could say, well, Hezek Riyah Shmei Hezek, Lav Shmei Hezek, it's two days in the Gemara. So this is not a consensus type of value in Jewish law. I think somebody could say that. There's a fair argument to make along those lines. I think the response, though, is to say, well, as we saw in the first two or three shiurim, Mandamar Lav Shmei Hezek is really about the scope of the application of Hezekriah, right? So, for example, it's about applying it to a chatzer. But when you're dealing with Hezekah Debayis, that's clearly a protected domain in Jewish law. And of course, a person would have to forbear from intruding visually on somebody's private home. You guys see that? So that would be a way of rejecting the objection from the machlokas and the view that holds Lav Shmei Hezek. You can meet that that criticism by saying, no, everybody agrees in the important cases that privacy is a real value. Hezek at the Bayis is shiny. Rashi and Rabbeinu Gershom said something along the lines of, you know, inish tznia bebeisei tfei, that a person home is more private, and that's why that's going to be protected. Machlogas is really just about whether the domain of privacy extends to your chatzah. The second thing, and similarly, hezeka derabim shiny, right? You might say, well, one neighbor who every now and then intrudes on your privacy, it's not such a significant intrusion, but the consistent intrusion from hezeka derabim, that degree of violation of your privacy, that consistent and permanent infringement, that is protected by halacha, and that kind of privacy is a value. So do you guys see that? That's the way I think of responding to the mandamar, to the objection that flows from emphasizing mandamar lav shmei hezek. Again, my own view is that it's a bit of an open question, meaning I think somebody could say, maybe the fact that Lakshmi has a really is stronger, but then I guess that view would have to respond to how to make sense of Hezeket the Rabim shiny and Hezeket the Pai is shiny, right? So probably the safest thing here is to say that in the extreme cases, everybody agrees that privacy is a protected value. To further this point beyond Hezeket the Bias and Hezeket the Rabim, I think another good makor to think of in this respect is the Rimi Gash. So remember, the Rimi Gash said that even though a chazaka works for Hezek Re'ia, that's only with regard to the architectural kind of Hezek Re'ia. If you're poseach chalon across from someone's property, so architecturally you could be muchzak on having the structural capacity, the building structure capacity to invade someone's privacy. But the chazaka never permits you to actually stand there and look out through your window into somebody else's home, right? So the law, halacha, would not require you to block your window. You could be muchzak in having the capacity to look into his house, but it's never permissible for you to actually peer into his house, standing there with your own vision and doing so. Everybody remember that, Rimi Gash? So that would mean that man damar, let's say, you could say something along the lines of man damar lav shmei hezek is really referring to the zoning laws and building code rules that would block somebody from having the capacity. But that man damar would still concede that it's always wrong for a person to engage in the activity of hezek riya. Everybody agree with that reading of, I mean, that's applying the Rimi Gash's analysis of chazaka to and imposing that distinction on the mandamar lav shmei hezek, right? That the view is not, you know, not just about chaseros, etc. It's about building structures in general, not about the activity of peering. Ariel, you have a hand on this?
Yeah, you might have just clarified it. So according to the Rimi Gash, you would say when it says lav shmei hezek, the actual building of a window isn't shmei hezek, but looking through the window would be?
Exactly. That's exactly the distinction that the Rimi Gash applies to his analysis of chazaka, we would apply to the domain of discussion for lav shmei hezek. Correct. It's just about the architecture issues, not about the activity of being mazik through Riyah. Correct. Great. Any other thoughts on this little opening? So that's the first issue, I would say. Is privacy a value? And you might say no because of, or at least it's a disputed value. But I think there are these two good ways to respond by saying everybody agrees it's a value and Mandamar Lav Shmei Hezek is limited to certain cases. Romy?
Yeah, I'm just wondering why, this is more of a general question, you chose to frame the, like, what are summing up as, okay, does privacy exist? Is there Hezek Re'ia or not? As opposed to saying, like, meaning what about other people that, or the ways to frame Hezek Re'ia is not necessarily about privacy in that kind of way. Or we're going to get there.
We're going to get there, yeah.
Okay.
This is just the opening salvo. So, okay. Meaning I think before we try to figure out what kind of privacy is protected by Hezek Re'ia, we have to figure out whether Hezek Re'ia is a thing. On the face of it, the Gemara has two deos about whether Hezek Re'ia is a thing altogether. And the view that Hezek Re'ia is lav shmei hezek takes the whole discussion off the table. And my point is, we want to come back, we want to reiterate that even man damar lav shmei hezek concedes certain important features.
I guess I'm asking is that you're basically saying that any shita that of, you know, understanding of Hezek Re'ia assumes that it's privacy. Like even like Chayvus HaShutvus or something like that is a version of privacy, just in a different kind of way.
Exactly. I'm going to take a very not as pluralistic as Ray Lamb's analysis to throw in, you know, all those other things as part of Hezek Re'ia, like the non-Hezek Re'ia sugyas as being part of a privacy discussion. But for now, I'm just going to treat Hezek Re'ia in all its different dimensions as different types of privacy considerations. Of course, those different types of privacy considerations may not be internally related to each other. Right. So for now, let's say Ayin Hara's type of, it's related to privacy in that what you can't view your neighbor doing. Yeah, good. Is that fair, Romy? Okay, good. So now I want to turn to what I have here as the second issue. Once we get past the Mandamar Lapshmei Hezek and say, well, it is some sort of halachically recognized principle. What type of principle is it? And here, just starting with the weakest sense of what's the weakest type of principle Hezekiah can be interpreted as being? So what's the weakest form, the weakest interpretation as a value of Hezekiah? So I think here, the weakest form of Hezekiah, or the weakest characterization of Hezekiah as a value, would be what we spoke about in the shiur on Sunday. The idea that Hezekiah is really just about property enhancement. We could quibble about actually which of these following options, as we get to, is it the weakest. But the way I'm going to present it, I'm just going to opt with this one as the weakest, that Hezekiah is really just about a type of zoning code consideration to enhance the values of people's properties and chatzeros. My example that I gave in this year then was about, let's say, in Yerushalayim, always building in Jerusalem stone because it makes the buildings in the neighborhood more beautiful. So too, we think that people get more value out of their properties when they also get some dimension of private use out of it. It's just to borrow the language of the Lubush Mordechai, this flows from the tikkun hachatzer and the hatavas hachatzer. It just makes the property better overall if you could also get private use out of it, right? So we can think of a society where there are no fences between homes and a society with fences. And the judgment call is that the net increase in value based off getting some privacy is just overall better for the properties in the neighborhood. It maximizes people's efficient use of land. Sorry, you have a hand on this?
Yeah, I think we've made this point in earlier, sure, but I just want to point out that this is not saying, oh, it's all just dollars and cents, and it's all, like, I think this still does reflect a value of privacy, that, you know, this is something that people consider valuable, or at least that we think that people should maybe consider valuable. We've seen, like, throwaway lines, like, the Yad Ramah was like, having a fence, like, that doesn't improve the chutzner at all. So it's not necessarily such an obvious position. And I think even if you want to say it's merely a economic improvement of zoning law, there's still like a background behind it that does reflect a broader, you know, if you're looking for a privacy value in a broad sense, I think you'd still find it there.
Yeah, I agree. I would say, but it becomes an economic value, right? Or the extent to which it's protected in halacha is basically to the same extent that the halacha, you know, protects things like not wasting resources or securing your land use for yourself. It's like a nice, so I agree with you, Zacharia. I'm not disagreeing with your point. But this is obviously, I would say, on the lower side, like real dine mamonis, right? Not even, it doesn't rise to the level of nezek. It's a regulatory value in favor of giving people added benefits from their land. Yeah. And I think you're right, Zachary, that this speaks to the fact that private use is a halachic recognized benefit, 100%. Yeah. Great. So I'm not going to go into this in any great detail, but I just want to say that it's clearly not nezek to intrude on somebody's privacy on this view, this hatavas achatzer perspective. It's really just a type of mamon, a chi of mamon type consideration that the chachamim take into account when they regulate land use. And, you know, we saw a lot of concrete examples on Sunday, so I don't need to go back into them here. Anybody else have further thoughts on this way of parsing Hezekiah? Hatavas Achatzer perspective, is this clear to everybody? Does everybody have an intuitive grasp on the view? how it's different from Nezek. Yeah, Shmuel's sound good. Okay, good. Ned sounds good. Ezra sounds good. Yeah. Okay. Rafi. Great. Josh Hurt. Josh Brofman. Great. I asked almost everybody. Okay. If I could ask Benji, Ariel, Daniel, and Romy. Everybody? Yeah. Zolti, good. Yeah. Okay, great. So now let's turn to the third point of discussion here. Here, a different way of thinking of privacy as a value, or a different consideration that we've seen, is privacy as a value, a moral virtue, embodied by this notion of Ayn Ra. So what is that? What type of value is that? So I think the best way of, the Gemara mentions this on Daf Beis, Asal Adam Lamad Besada Chaveiro, B'Shal Shehi Omedes B'Kamoseha. So you can't, it's wrongful to look at your friend's property when it's in its ripeness or its fullness. So the Rishonim there explain this in terms of Ayin Ra. Rashi mentions this, Rebbe Gershom mentions this. We did see a debate whether this formally gets classified as part of Hezekiah or not Hezekiah. I think that's actually less significance for this discussion. That's like a conceptualization question, but it certainly falls into the broader category of looking at your friend's field and the type of value. Halacha sees it as a value to forbid you from peering into your friend's field. So whether we think that's the same type of privacy of Hezekiah or different is an interesting question. I don't think it's relevant for this analysis. Okay. So what is this value of Ayin Ra, blocking Ayin Ra? So I think the best way to characterize it based on what we've seen is that this is a moral virtue for the ro'eh. Right? So privacy is a good thing, not for the victim whose property is being seen, but at least on this formulation, it's a good thing for the ro'eh, for the perpetrator, not to invade other people's privacy. So why is that? So some Rishonim pointed us to the Mishnah in Avos, Beis Tes, and Beis Yud Aleph. The Mishnah is there, used some version or some variation of Ayin Ra, Ayin Hara. And the Mishnah says that Ayin Ra is Motzi Es Ha'Adam Min Ha'Olam. The Rishonim explain that as referring to the viewer. So why was that? So Rabbeinu Yonah told us, anybody remember Rabbeinu Yonah's interpretation? You could go back into the Makoro sheet, but he said something along the lines that you get so worked up by your jealousy that you end up harming yourself. Right? Like you see, like, oh, like my friend has such great things. Oh, look at that nice Maserati he just bought himself. And then you just get yourself worked up in angst and upsetness that you harm yourself for no reason. Does this ring familiar? I could pull up the language here if you give me a second. Give me 1 second. Okay. Here we go. So this is all on the source sheet here. You can see Rabbeinu Yonah said, "Your goreim ra la'atzmo, gam bekirbo yisaref, achar shemis ava l'dvarim she'en yecholas matli biyado lasos hamach lasos." Like you get yourself worked up over things that you can't control. It's not in your hand to acquire them. And hamachshava hahi mikalkelas gufo, he iskatze rucho motziyasa min olam. You know, thinking about like the stuff that other people have, it just like wastes your resources, gets you upset, and ends up harming you for no reason. Yeah. So that's clearly about, so the idea is that privacy is a value to protect the viewer from unnecessary agmas nefesh. Let me just point you to a few similar formulations. The Meiri said that if you have an ayin hara, meaning if you desire that which other people have, so then you're going to be goreim lahem takala. You're actually going to end up doing something stupid yourself because you're going to try to take that thing away from them, arguably, or you're going to try to block them from getting good things in the future, maybe. So actually there it's not so clear about whether the victim is truly the victim or whether the viewer is considered to be the one who's suffering the wrongdoing, because you're gonna do something to harm them. But if you look at the Tashbetz, is very clear, citing the Rambam, that the edge of the wrongfulness is on the viewer. Shemitoch shehu charetz lasof mamon yachnis atzmo l'sakanos. You're going to put yourself in harm's way to try to achieve that which your neighbor has in some dangerous way. So that's a common refrain in the Rishonim. So I just would say, on the table, this is also consistent with the Rambam's language in the Tshuva, where the Rambam called Ayin Ra Midas Chasidus. Everybody remember that formulation that the Rambam had in his tshuva to the Chachmei Lunil? Pull it up for you right here in the famous Gina discussion. The Rambam here said, there's a difference between Hezek Re'iyah, which is Hezek Gadol, which is not the Ayin Hara type, uvein Hezek Re'iyah she'yireh kamas chavero mishum ein abisha, she'elu dvarim chasidus heim, Shiloya ayin bo ba'ayin ra. That's just like a kind of pious conduct to not look badly at somebody else. So any thoughts on this view? So I think the chiddush of this view is that privacy is a value to protect the virtuosity of the onlooker, that he should not have kina or get himself worked up about other people's possessions. Thoughts on this?
Yeah, just on the Midas Chasidus, do we come to a conclusion where the Midas Chasidus is you putting up a fence to remind other people not to get jealous is your Midas Chasidus? Or are you saying that, no, refraining yourself from engaging in Ayin Hara always is just a Midas Chasidus?
Yeah, I think the latter. That's just my sense. like the concern of Ayin Ra itself is a type of Midas Chasidus, because it's about cultivating like virtuous character traits. That's my sense of reading the Rambam. Sorry. Romy, you have a hand on this?
Yeah, you might have addressed this and I might have just missed it, but isn't Rabbeinu Yonah also, like, he also talks about the whole metaphysical thing, right? So
he does, but notice even when Rabbeinu Yonah gets metaphysical, so there are two metaphysical components, let's say, here. Rabbeinu Yonah says, Avir olam menachshava hu besor yefes advarim, she'uyin behem be'ein av hara, and then gam bekirbo yisare, achar shem misavol advarim, she'ein yechol es matzei b'yado lasos ha'machshava ha'hin mikalkel es gufo, ki yiskatze ruchol motziyasa min olam. So he has like these, the Ayin Ra does two things, right? It does, you think, cause some adverse effect on the possession, but it also just stews and burns up inside you.
Okay, so you read that middle line about the object or whatever as really only secondary and not the actual concern.
You know, it may be primary, but if it is primary, then it comes close to an actual Nezek theory of Hezek Re'iyah. Meaning, if you think they're metaphysically, right, when you look at, then it gets subsumed under that part of the discussion, which we'll get to later on.
Okay.
But I'm trying to isolate what would be unique about the Ayin Ra perspective as distinct from the other perspectives. And I think the uniqueness lies in that it emphasizes like the the virtuous conduct or the good conduct of the roe, that he shouldn't get worked up and jealous through seeing the good things that other people have.
Okay.
Yeah. You want to push back, Romy, or that's acceptable?
No, that makes sense to me. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Because I think if you're thinking of actual nezek or burning things up with your eyes, then that would fit nicely with the nezek mammon view of hezekria. Great. Anybody else have a thought on this this perspective, the Ayin Ra perspective on hezekria? Okay. So let's move now to point number four, which I think is conceptually related to point number three, in that it too emphasizes the virtuous conduct of the looker, the viewer, but not, let's say, less from a Midas Chassidus perspective and more from a Yoredeya perspective. So here I think we have the idea of privacy as mainly interested in Smiusa Dinashi. Right, we saw that phrase used in the Yad Ramah and Daf Samech, on the Gemara about Bilam, Vayisai, and Avayar, as Yisrael Shilchim Lishvatav. And the Yad Ramah, we saw a bunch of Rishonim use the phrase Tznius. We were on the fence. What does Tznius actually connote? But the Yad Ramah actually characterized Tznius in terms of Tznius Adinashi, right? The privacy of woman. So let's assume that that's literally about protecting the roe from, let's say, violating the iser of histaklos. I remember at the time there were different ways of interpreting this, and we had a debate in the shir room about whether that's the right way to interpret the Yad Ramah. But it's definitely one, I think, persuasive or compelling read of the Yad Ramah. You guys agree with that? Another formulation that works well actually with this this way of thinking is, anybody remember off the top of their head?
Baruch Hasfardi, that if you roll a bias, you're roll a bain behind, bain barayos. He says barayos, which is exciting.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I had in mind. So in the Hezekiah de Bias discussion, we saw Baruch Hasfardi, who said Hezekiah de Bias shiny. Devada has a gamarhu, Shayashki Vala Bivesa Bikalinin, Bain La Ayin, Bain La Rayos. So again, in context, it's very possible that Rabbeinu Baruch means something broader. But the Bain La Rayos component itself is very intriguing. And if we put that together with the Yad Ramah, maybe we have a group of Rishonim who think of Hezekiah at least partially or one important component of it in terms of Tznius Adinashi. Now, I didn't put this makor on the makor sheet then, but I just added it for today. You know, you have these Rambams in Yisurei Bia, Perek Chaf Aleph, Halacha Chaf and Chaf Aleph, and there are a few more Rambams in context there. You know, the Rambam says, codifying what we would call the Yisur Histaklus, V'lo Yistakel B'behema V'chayev Oof B'sha Shem Mizdakik in Zachar L'Nekeva. You know, a person shouldn't view animals while they're engaged in intercourse. Why? The underlying concern here is that shelo yavali dehirer. A person shouldn't think licentious thoughts. It's mutter for somebody who's a cattle farmer to do this, because when he's asik ben malachto, he's not going to have these thoughts. And then in Halacha Chaval, if the Rambam says, and maybe this is one way of just cashing out the notion of Tznius Adinashi. So again, an iser on a person, so if this is what underlies the notion of Tznius Adinashi as embodied in Hezekiah for Rabbeinu Baruch and for the Yad Ramah, then again, it seems to be not about the victim, the object of the Riyah, but about the Roe and his pious conduct, right? That he shouldn't have these types of Hirurim. So that would be a I think, a separate idea from Ayn Ra, but conceptually very similar, right? It's getting worked up by different types of thoughts, not about kina for a person's possessions, but in the types of hirhurim, asura mataramam talks about in Nisuribiya. Thoughts on this? Everybody on board for that as a possible separate value in privacy, Josh?
Yeah, I feel like this one is just like a little insensitive to the victim. Like, I feel like kind of this approach that we've been developing now for a little bit is like, it's kind of just disregarding the victim and, you know, that level of privacy. So obviously there are these two things that we're going back and forth between, but I don't know. Like, I guess that's just kind of
say a little more about that, Josh. I think I agree with you. Just flesh out the idea that you're getting at.
I don't know. Like, I feel like this version of privacy or this version of Hezek is almost coming at the cost of, you know, the other thing that we've been considering, which is the privacy of the victim.
Yeah. So I totally agree. And the views that we'll get to, the next view is going to be all about the victim. And when you think about it from a Nezek point of view, you're clearly thinking about the victim who's harmed by the invasion of privacy. But I think what's striking about the Ayn Ra, what's unique about the Ayn Ra and the Snusa Dinashi Hirhor perspective is that, yeah, it's really just about the Roa. Now, let me just ask you a little more, Josh. Are you saying that these views strike you as implausible even in the broader context of Hezek Re'iya, or that even within the idea of Isurei Bia and Isur Histakulos and Sinusa Dinashi, it seems wrong to think about that just from the perspective of the Roe?
I guess on a grander Hezek Re'iya scheme, that's kind of where I was going with this.
Okay.
Like with this Ayn Ra, we're kind of like only concerned about the damage to the Mazik, which just seems a little twisted.
Yeah. I think that's really interesting. Let me take your, does everybody hear what Josh is getting at? I think your point is actually even more interesting if you make it within the Tsnusa Dinashi perspective. So when Cole was here for, I guess, your Rosh Hashanah, got into a very, very heated debate about this, talking about Hezek Re'iya. And, you know, I was floating some of these ideas about Hezek Re'iya, about Snusa Dinashi just being from the row. And Cole said that's ridiculous because if a woman were to walk around Mea Sharim improperly dressed, they would say there's something wrong with her. Like, she's doing a wrong, not just that she's doing an instrumental wrong in causing the men viewing her to violate an Avera. Okay. So I told Cole he's for sure, I think Cole was for sure wrong. Meaning when you criticize somebody for dressing immodestly, I think when you look at these Rambams, right, the criticism is that you're kind of lifnei iver, right, for somebody to violate their hirhurim, right, their hirhurim isurim. No? You guys agree with me on that? Meaning, there's nothing intrinsically wrong from the perspective of the victim, from the person who's seen, right? Now, do you guys agree or disagree? I don't know. So Cole thought that when a mashkiach tells a Beis Yaakov girl, you can't walk, you are like degrading yourself by walking outside dressed that way. They're trying to locate the wrongdoing in something more intrinsic than just a stimulus for somebody else's bad thoughts. Do you agree or disagree? So I said that those Bali Musar are just clearly unreflective, or, you know, they're thinking as Bali Musar, not as Bali Halacha when they talk in those terms, right? Like, there's nothing intrinsically wrong, let's say, don't quote me on this, when a woman walks out dressed immodestly, But the thing that's wrong is that it's like a lifnei iver maybe for parak chafal of isuri bia. Josh, you had a comment on this responding?
Yeah, I was just going to say that seems clearly true, because if there are no guys around, then it doesn't matter, right? Like, if it was about something intrinsic, then it wouldn't make a difference if you were, like, at home with just, like, I don't know, other girls.
Okay, but the argument is that, like, you somehow are degrading yourself, right? You're, by dressing a certain way. That's often what you hear.
I don't know, isn't there, like, an idea of, like, a field of Sadri Hadarim? And, like, there's, like, Hatsnei Lefes, Hatsnei Hashem, and therefore it's more of, like, you know, it's not a little either to Hashem, right? That's clearly ridiculous. So clearly it's about, you know, a personal integrity kind of point. I think there's a valid perspective there.
Okay.
I don't know if that's the primary, let's say, halachic expression. I think, like, that, we're talking about Arayus, talking about Istribia, so then fine, you're talking about Hivurim and Lefeim. If you want to talk about, like, say, a broader picture, I think there is a more, like, you know, independent, yeah, self-standing
sneeze. Yeah. So the interesting, I would just say, and this is where I think Josh's point becomes very interesting, is that when you read contemporary arguments in philosophy and law about pornography, so the argument is not usually, from a secular perspective, the argument is not that pornography degrades the viewer or the patron of the content. The argument is that it dehumanizes the person who is, like, the person who's being looked at, right? Because you're viewing some human being as an object for your own pleasure, right, or for your own amusement, rather than as, like, the human being that they are. So there's something, like, degrading by allowing people to just be sources of pleasure for others, something like that. Everybody hear this type of argument? Is that familiar to you? It's an interesting perspective, and I wonder, based off Josh's comment, if there's that type of strain also in Isuri Bia Chavalah. Right, so why are these here Hurim Aser? So it could be that there's just something wrong with thinking certain types of thoughts because they distract you, whatever the Rambam might say in Marnavuchim. But you also might say that it does something wrong to the person who's being looked at, that their dignity somehow entitles them to not be looked at a certain way. That makes sense to you guys? Kharia?
Yeah, isn't there, like, a really classic Gemara of, like, oh, like, the guy who's, like, lovesick, and he would have died if he didn't see this woman, and, oh, can't I just look at her, like, me'acharei hageder? We said, no, we're not going to violate the dignity of, like, Benos Yisrael in this way.
Yes, well, that's Shalei Benos Yisrael Pudas Barayos, I think, right?
Well, that's how we said it, but, I mean, she's not doing anything.
Right.
I mean, I think it's a valid read of that Gemara, is that, like, that hit the guy using her as a kind of, like, an object in that way was intrinsically the problem.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. So, Josh, I don't know if this is what you were getting at all, because I think you were talking about, like, thinking of Hezekiah in general separate from the victim. But you could see, I wonder if that's a perspective sometimes that's helpful even for within the Isurei Bia Chaf Aleph discussion, thinking that the object of the viewing is also somehow relevant. But again, just from my reading of the Rambam, I don't get that sense, right? So Ayin Ra, along with the Isur Histaklus perspective, assuming the Isur Histaklus is the right way to read Sneusa Dinashi, would be Isurim that are interested in the virtuous conduct of the Roeh, not in protecting the victim anyway. Josh, you had a hand on this before we move on?
It's mostly off track. Never mind.
Okay. Everybody good? So everybody good so far with this this perspective? Okay. I think we should keep our eyes open for a view that sees Sneusa Dinashi more in the Nezek camp. But just my interpretation now, based off, like, the contextualizing it within Chafal for Visuri Bia, thinks of it more as akin to the Ayin Ra'a virtuosity of the roe, Midas Chasidus perspective. Great. Comments, thoughts before we move on? All right. So now we turn to what is the most interesting, the more interesting of views about hesagria, and this is the fifth point. So privacy as a kind of privacy as protected as the, at the same category as torts are protected. Right? So torts are kind of nezek, and there we're protecting the bodily integrity or the integrity of the property of individual property owners or individual persons. That's what nezikin is all about. So invasion of privacy is a type of nezek. Here, I think we're going to assume that the moral emphasis or the moral edge of nezikin is in protecting the rights of the victim. And so understood this way, halacha has a very clear interest in protecting the privacy rights of individuals. I think somebody want to say just what do you think is the strongest makar that we saw so far that takes a stand on hezekria being a type of nezek? Other than the phrase hezekria shmei hezek or la shmei hezek, we saw that phrase be pulled in a few different directions. What do you think is the best makar to support this type of view that firmly puts hezekria in a true nezek camp? Who's gonna guess this? Small.
And one that stands out in my mind is the Rashbits.
The Rashbat, the Tashbits?
Yeah.
Which one?
Sort of the one we talked about with sort of the eye beams and just like looking at it will cause damage.
Okay. I hear why you say that. Yeah. That's like taking my response to Romy earlier, right? That this would fall under the physical hezekria view would fall under the hezekam. Yeah, that's fair. Although I would say that's like almost like a tenuous type of nezek if you have to go for the eyes burning it up metaphysically. But Zolti has a hand.
I'm thinking the Ramban maybe.
What about the Ramban?
Your first choice has like a goof in that it's an issue of, you know, when you're actually causing like him to feel embarrassed and whatever when you're looking at it.
Yes, so very good. The Ramban, and particularly, what was the Ramban's halachic analysis there? Like, what halachic paradigm was the Ramban drawing on in that discussion? Do you remember?
Not 100%. Like, he was saying... He had three different, base kisei and, right, kutra and base kisei, yeah.
Yeah, and why are kutra and base kisei significant from the second para? Like, what was the halachic significance of those paradigms? What area of, what was the principle of Jewish law that the Ramban was trying to fit hezekria into?
The no chazaka for nezikin.
Yeah, exactly. No chazaka for nezikin, kutra base kisei being the exemplars of Ein Chazaka L'Nezikin. Romy, I think I saw you almost cough just now. Is that true?
Yeah.
I don't want to hear about Johnson & Johnson. No, I'm kidding. yeah, the Ramban was trying to fit it into Kutra Beis HaKisei as being Ein Chazaka L'Nezikin paradigm. And he said, hezekria is this kind, is a kind of nezek. And therefore, there's no chazaka for it. So Zolti, I think that's a really excellent example. That's the paradigm. That's the makar that I had in mind that very clearly elevates the hezek of the nezek of hezekria to being bona fide nezikin, like kutran beis like he said. So that was the Ramban you have here on Daf Nun Tes, right here. Really, it's really the tshuva, the riff, who makes the connection. And then the Ramban had a few good phrases, the best phrase being Aniyomar Kutra Besakisa Lefishahin Nizikin Beguf Ein Lahem Chazaka. And then the Ramban says that applies to Hezek Riya. Right, so not only is Hezek Riya a type of real Nezek, it's a type of Nezek that is committed against people's person, not just their property. Okay, and so I think the Chuvas, the Ramban and the Chuvas Arif are good sources that capture this view. More importantly, the Ramban says in this context that the significance of these examples, Hezek Riya, Kutra, and Beis Akise, Shehu Atzmo Nizok, Umitzta'er Bahem. So there's a type of tsar that comes along with this. So there's a kind of distress or pain that is suffered from Hezek Riya. You guys agree with that analysis? I think the Ramban like, here. Yeah,
go ahead. Like bringing it to Chavala.
Yeah, exactly. Like the Chavala type cases of tsar agup. Yeah, excellent. Okay, so I think the Ramban is really good. Is a really good makar on this. That I think is the strongest formulation of the nezek of Hezek Riya. Now let me just say one more thing. The mere fact that somebody suffers pain doesn't make something nezek, right? It's got to be that they're wrongfully suffering pain. They're being caused to suffer pain that they're entitled to be protected from. I think that's an important point. So it's not that the halacha entitles you to be free from pain, right? The point is that the halacha entitles you to be protected from the type of pain that you suffer from the invasion of privacy. Right? The Ramban's clearly assuming something along those lines.
Is that why Ein Lanu Lahamsi Nizikin Midatenu, as in this is such a categorical shift to include this as something that halacha cares about, and to go even further and include this other category, making this a big deal that this is a
maybe the idea is that we don't Nizikin categories have to be articulated, right? We can't just I think there's just, as you pointed out, a lot of methodological assumptions and what's creating a category and what's just deriving, or what's showing that the category previously exists from existing halachic case law. Right, so that's a separate issue. but I think this Ramban is really great on this front. Now, let me just say a little more about this. I think there's the other language that I would point us to is the Rambam's language in this discussion. So make sure I have it. Rambam in Shechinim Yud Aleph Dalet, when he talked about the four things that don't have a chazaka for nezikin, but arba meaning nezikin that are not subject to chazakos, he said Ashan Varech Besakise, Avak, Nidnud Hakarka. That's a little ground shaking. So the Rambam would be anti-fracking. I don't know if fracking actually gives rise to those little earthquakes, but they claim it does. Ashan Barech Besakise Avak, and then Hezek Riya, the Rambam said. V'chein Hezek Riya v'makom shetzarech mechitza. Why? V'lama shino nizakim eilu mishar nizikin. So what does the Rambam say? Somebody just read out this phrase for us. Go for it, Ariel.
I'm thinking I have to readjust the window. I can't see the whole thing at once. She'ein da'ato shel adam sogel nezek me'ilo.
Yeah, meaning what?
That a person can't really live with that going on.
Yeah, he doesn't tolerate. A person's mind doesn't tolerate these types of things. So there's a certain notion here that Hezek Riya is intolerable. And it's not the kinds of thing that the human mind could calibrate itself to or become used to. So there's a sense that invasion of privacy is really distressing. And I think do you guys agree with my reading of the Rambam and the Ramban. So that's like Tsar. It's Ein Das, Deitish Lodom Soveles, Nezek Meilu. These are really insufferable types of conditions. Now, let me just give one other source that I thought was important. Going back to the Shut HaRambam on Ayin Hara. So I'll just go back to here for a moment. In his Tshuva to the Chachmei Lunil, you will call the Rambam's formulation that Hezek Ria, there's a type of Hezek Ria, which is Hezek Gadol. Hezek Gadol Vadai, Sheyira Adam Chavir Ve'ishu Omid V'yoshev Oset Tzracha. Notice, you know, the Rambam here doesn't say it in terms of pain or distress, but he's got to mean something along those lines, right? You're doing great harm by viewing somebody when they're just doing their ordinary things. Right? Do you ever have this sensation, like you're even just like sitting on the subway, which is a public space, and someone's like staring at you? It gets you very uncomfortable, right? So like that's, it's unnerving, right? I forgot in the beginning of the year, somebody sent out that great article on the Sheer WhatsApp about the camera that was looking into somebody's field, and the guy felt like somebody was always watching him. Who sent that out? That was great. Yeah, Benji, great public service. So there's this sense of uncomfortableness, and that's a type of nezek in and of itself, right? It's distressing. Okay. So let me just say one other point on this front, that this nezek haguf, sar, daito shlodom is not so well the nezek, takes a stance on also the content of hezek ria, that it's really just about viewing somebody doing ordinary things, right? Not about viewing how much money they have, right? So the content is actually different from the Ayin Ra type of consideration. It's not about seeing illicit material of like snusa dinashi or content that elicits bad hirhurim, right? It's really indifferent to the mindset of the mazik. It's really just about the feelings of the nizak, right? The fact that he's disturbed by being under a watchful eye. Ariel, you have a thought on that? And notice also that it's
yeah, it seems, I guess, according to the Rambam here, that there's two different ways of looking at it. One is looking from the perspective of the nizak being damaged and from the mazik being damaged. Can he say that it's going to be both, or is there going to be an external din that's going to be one scenario, and then Hezek Ria will be the other scenario?
Here it could be both. I would just say that when he says in daita shladam soveles, that's clearly nizak focused. When the Ramban says that there's a certain sar, that's also clearly nizak focused, right? Ariel?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the in Adam Sobelas, I guess in different cases, there'd be different scenarios of who would be the Nizak. I guess the smokestack, I guess the Nizak is going to be the person on the other side, whereas in the case of the person peering in, the Nizak would be like, okay, I see.
So,
yeah.
But just, I just want to also emphasize that what's striking about this Rambam is that it's the viewing of mundane activities, right? Be'eshev ome b'yoshev oset tzracha. And again, I'm assuming oset tzracha doesn't mean like going to the bathroom. I think we discussed this. Oset tzracha, I think, just means like doing your stuff, like your activities, right? Okay, are we in agreement? Yeah, great. Just one other formulation in this regard, that Rimi Gash, just going back to it, the Rimi Gash in the discussion of Chazaka for Hezek Ria, let me pull this up. So remember, he distinguished between the architectural Chazaka and actually viewing him, which is not subject to chazakas. So the Rimi Gash and Daf Beis said, the chazakah is just for opening up the window, but teidad ibo'i bal chalom yunei bei, my ka'avid chavre, my ikavir shuse, mikal memar demotzim mevad hachi. Of course, you can't look at your friend and see what he's doing and what he has in his possession. So the Rimigash also seems to concede that there's some type of nezek. He doesn't say nezek, but there's some sort of harm directed at the person when you look at him in his person. And Josh Brofman made the great point in the last year, or I think it was Sunday year, because I think he was en route in his commute when he made the point, that the Rimigash here also says Ma'ika Bershuse. And so part of what generates the distress and tsar is not just the fact that there's surveillance on your person, but surveillance on your stuff, which is a really interesting extension of what the, you know, maybe the Rambam and the Ramban are thinking, right? Just there's something distressing that somebody has an eye on what you have. People, excuse me. Do you guys ever encounter people who think this way? You know, it's like, phone tracking. My people are really worried about people tracking their phones. You ever see this? Or like the government spying because they know where my Easy Pass was last used or something. Or credit card spending. People really get very worked up about this. And sometimes you sit back and you're like, well, if you're not doing anything illegal, like, what do you really care if someone's tracking you? Or any of you have that perspective? So people feel very different about this. The Rimi Gash seems to come down on the side of, right? Like, no, like that you, like, nobody should be have the right to know what you're doing and what stuff you have and what's going on. What do you, Josh, you had a thought on this? Josh Hurt?
Yeah, I mean, I do take that other side of the argument, but like, it's very easy to understand where the Rimi Gash is getting this from. Like, as you said, it's, you know, different people have different philosophies about this.
Yeah, so there's so understood that what's nice about the Rimi Gash is that if you want like this very broad application of the halachic right to privacy, it's almost capturing that intuition, right? The intuition that my stuff should be private, my possessions should be private, no one else's business, and the halacha recognizes that it's legitimate for me, it's a protected interest of mine that nobody have a view of my doings and my possessions. There's a whole thing going on now about the IRS should have the ability to look into people's bank accounts. So they go, right to privacy, like the IRS shouldn't be able to know what kind of financial dealings you have. But a similar type of debate. Okay, thoughts on that? Okay, great. Now, I should just say, there is a much weaker form of the Hezek Re'ia as Nezek view. That's the idea of Hezek Re'ia as a form of Nizkei Mamon, meaning harm suffered by your property in the sense that you're losing actual use of your property by the chilling effect of not using it when your neighbor is gonna be able to see it. Right, so that's not this type of tsar, nezek she'ein daito shel adam sovel. It's because we're not saying that there's like a protected right of privacy that you shouldn't be stressed out by people seeing you, etc. This seems to be a much narrower type of halachic consideration that if you own certain types of land and stuff like that, you should get like the full monetary use of it, right? So, you know, the Rush in Achuva had that formulation of Menias Tashmishin. The Prisha and the Sma had formulations of this. Remember, like a person is going to lose use of their chatzer because they're worried about their trade secrets being leaked to their neighbor. Remember, like those types of things. So that's a much weaker type of Hezek Re'ia as Nezek theory. That's, I would say, the Rush and the Sma type view. It focuses on a type of property damage And I think it's actually conceptually very distinct from the Hezek Ria privacy as protecting the person from the people seeing my ka'avid, et cetera, et cetera. That view of the of what we call the Ramban's view and the Rambam in the Tshuva's view and the Rambam Mishnah review and even the Rimi Gash view, I think is different in that it's really in the, they don't care about whether you're suffering some monetary loss because of it, right? It could be that you're going to continue doing your activities as normal. Still, like, you're entitled to not be stressed out. You're entitled to not be discomforted by the peering eyes of your fellow citizens. Everybody agree on that distinction? Thoughts? Zacharia?
Yeah, how would you distinguish this from kind of the first approach we brought, like, the Ravid of the Hatava Sachatzer? Is it just like, where's your baseline? Like, he seems to kind of stretch around to the same place.
Oh, so I think they're different. I'm glad you asked that. I think they're different in that so one is Nezek based and one is not Nezek based. Meaning, one of them you might say is a gift given to you by legal policy. So no, your rights have not been, on the Hatavas HaChatzer view, your rights have not been trampled upon if you are denied efficient use of your chatzer. It's really just a collective benefit that society tries to provide, that a halachic society tries to provide. That's different from the view that once you own, if you own property, you're entitled to get private use out of it. Right, you'd be denied something that's yours if the courts and society failed to protect that interest of yours. You see, Zacharia? So one's much weaker than the other. That's the thought. Great. Comments, thoughts on this? Ned, how does it sound to you? Ned? Thumbs up? Great. Let me just make one more point. This is the sixth point in this presentation. And that is maybe one final perspective on the value of privacy, or the type of value that privacy is. Again, not in its content, but in its form and the type of halacha that it is, or the type of interest that it protects. I derive from the Tshuvas HaRashba. So we saw the Tshuvas HaRashba who said that a minhag to not abide by Hezek Ria is not a good minhag. We saw this in the Yad Arma. The Yad Arma said, Mishum Isser at Tsinus Adinashi, but because you can't be Poreit Gidron Shal Yisrael, you can't be Poreit Gidron Shal Yisrael, that was the language of the Tshuvas HaRashba, and that it's Gorim L'Shechina Shetisalek Mi Yisrael. You guys remember that formulation in the Tshuvas HaRashba? So at the time, I was suggesting that maybe that shows that Hezek Ria is really a public law type issue. Meaning, rather than thinking of Hezek Ria as protecting the individual right of the Nizak, and rather than thinking of Hezek Ria in the Ayin Hara, Isser Tznius, sense where it's protecting the pious conduct of the mazik, we think of Hezek Ria as protecting a collective interest of the kahal, right? That the kahal gains from its social fabric being organized a certain way. I know that's terribly abstract. But it's the way a Jewish society is supposed to be ordered, is supposed to be ordered with this type of tznius, or this type of privacy that's protected throughout. Now, what's the value in protecting the kahal type privacy separate from the individual? So one thing you could say is that maybe every individual could in principle be mochel on their privacy. But if you think of this as a public law type idea, it's an interest of its tzibur, then no individual could be mochel on behalf of its tzibur. Now, why would that be? So you have to say that there's some deeper halachic interest in people having privacy separate from their own individual selfish interests. Right? So what might that be? So I want to say something about that when we get at the very end of this year today. But at least just for now, I want to point out that at least that makar of the Rashba might represent an important view that Hezek Re'ia is about the society's general interest in looking a certain way, in reinforcing a certain mode of conduct, separate from any individual rights to privacy that an individual might assert. Anybody see any questions on that? Even though it's very abstract? No? Okay. So those are the main six issues that I wanted to just summarize and bring together from what we've seen so far in the main Mikoros on Hezek Re'ia. Okay, so again, just to review those six things. Number one is privacy a value altogether? Maybe that's about Hezek Re'ia, Shmei Hezek, Lav Shmei Hezek, but I think we're better off saying that everybody agrees it's a value based off the considerations we saw in the beginning of Shir today. Number two, the weakest way to my mind of thinking of Hezek Re'ia, Shmei Hezek is that this is just a tikkun achatzer, a tavas achatzer perspective, not about nezek, etc. Number three is that maybe the value of hezek is about ayin ra'a. We were interpreting ayin ra'a as about the pious conduct of the roa. He shouldn't get jealous, etc., etc. Number four is the idea of privacy as snusa dinashi, again about the roa, about the viewer. But protecting him from his Yisurim, Hirhurim Rayim. Number five is privacy as Nezek. I think that's the Derech HaMelech. That's the main view, the main way of thinking about Hezek Re'ia. Here, of course, there are very important different formulations, but the main internal distinction within privacy as Nezek is Nezek HaGuf versus Nezek Mamon in the sense of the Rosh and the Prisha, Menias Tashmish and Malachatzah. And again, the sixth point is thinking of Hezek Re'ia as protecting a public social interest in privacy, distinct from any individual's right to privacy. The key feature of number five of the fifth discussion of privacy as Nezek is that it's protecting the private entitlement of individuals to privacy. Okay, is that a helpful summary of the main key points? Yeah, Josh Hurt, you didn't think that was helpful?
Very, thank you.
Okay. I just didn't nod your head as enthusiastically as everybody else nodded your head. Okay. So now I want to return now in the last, I should say this. Anybody not find that helpful? Okay. Phew. Did I miss anything? If, you know, when you spend some time today just looking over the Makoros and tell me if I missed something major in our summary. In the last few minutes, I want to spend some time just thinking over the last few pages of the Rabbi Lam article. And whereas what I sketched until now is to try to sketch the legal framework that characterizes why or the sense in which privacy is protected by halacha, what type of value is it? Here I want to address a question that's not addressed explicitly at all in the Makoros, which is fine. And I think the Makoros usually analyze the legal components, which is what the Gemara generally presents. But we want to figure out what is the value of privacy, right? Which is distinct from the question we've been asking until now, which is what type of value is privacy is? What type of value is privacy? Here we want to ask, well, what exactly is the value, right? And so, you know, we appreciate Rabbi Lam's attempt in the article that we discussed to try to shed light on that. I think Rabbi Lam oscillated between two points that he took as related. I'm just going to look back at that article here on page 297 and 298. So on 297, Rilam said, you know, Hashem is mysterious. Man follows God. So man has a dimension of mysteriousness. And then he said man should remain mysterious. So I think we all thought that was a little peculiar, right? I think we were in agreement on that yesterday. Sorry, on Tuesday. Was anybody not in agreement about that? Ned, were you in agreement?
Just because something's peculiar doesn't mean it's wrong, you know.
That's true. Right. That's true. But Ned, were you in agreement? That was, yeah. You know, we didn't think that was such a persuasive argument.
I'm not so sure. It holds for most of the definitions that we. I think it holds for the tzniut, mishum tzniuta.
Tzniut sedinashi?
Not tzniut sedinashi, but like just whenever we'd say mishum tzina, I think it could work. I mean, it's a broad enough theory.
I would say it wasn't at all clear from Rilam's presentation why a person should remain mysterious, right? Like, what's the value in being mysterious? So you said, Hashem's mysterious.
It's a virtue ethic. It's velachta bedrachav. It's a function of that.
Yeah. So he did ground it in velachta bedrachav. By the way, I don't know if anybody caught this, but Rabbi Lam's famous for his drush. So you had great drush in Hatsnea. If you saw on page 298, that's pshat in Hatsnea lechas and Hashem ulukecha. That it's like, just like Hashem is tzanua in that he's unknowable. So Hatsnea lechas, like you should embody that trait of Hashem. I don't know if anybody caught that. It was very, very clever drush. I mean, not pshat in the pasuk. Right, pshat and put in the pasuk is that the way you serve Hashem should be b'derech tzina, right? But I thought that was very cute in 298. But what Rilam kept saying, and I think he borrowed this from one of the secular articles he was drawing upon, that a person loses his personality if he doesn't have privacy. So he said, for example, respect for the inviolability of personal privacy is another way of saying respect for the integrity of self. But that was very highfalutin. It was very high-minded. It wasn't really clear why that's the case, right? What does privacy have to do with respect for the self? I take it Rumi probably agrees with me, right? And then Rabbi Lam said something like on the very bottom of 297, so he says, not only is he mysterious, meaning not only is man mysterious, he also should be. And the extension of this free and underdetermined center of personality, so like that sphere of privacy of the self, constitutes the boundaries of his selfhood and hence his privacy. That's a very suggestive notion, like somehow that like we lose our selfhood if we don't have that sphere of privacy. But again, very just thrown out there, not really fleshed out. So, I don't think it gave us anything to work with, even though the formulation is very suggestive. So I wanted to just push on that idea a little more. And, you know, either to give content to it or to give a more precise rendering of why privacy might hold this important value. So let me say, I don't know if anybody got. I recommend skimming through that Encyclopedia of Philosophy article about privacy if you have time. There's some interesting points that are made there. So one thing they say, which I think is not really supported at all in any of the sources, and at least not in anything we've seen, is that maybe privacy is a value because you can't have special or intimate social relationships without privacy. The idea being, this is a very clever point, that if everybody has equal access to all, like if everyone knows the same information about you, then you can't create special relationships through sharing like special information. Anybody get the idea? So the idea is like sometimes when you feel close with somebody, you want to share something special, better private. But if all information, if everything, if there is no sphere of privacy, then you can't regulate like the closeness or remoteness of your social relationships. That makes sense? So the idea here is that regulating privacy is a way to give you tools from which to generate those types of personal relationships. Make sense? Now, I don't think that's really, that's more of like privacy of information, I would say, rather than privacy as being shielded from other people's viewing eyes. Although, of course, like you could see how the more people see you and the more you're in your public eye, the less private information you'll have. But I don't think that's really, that, you know, that doesn't have so much support in any of the Makoros we've seen, certainly not within the Hezekiah discussion. I think there's another sense of privacy. I'm just going to share this great, great quote from Virginia Woolf that I mentioned earlier in the year. So this is from her Room of One's Own. All right, I put it on the same Makoros sheet as the Rabbi Lam Makoros. So she writes here that she, you know, she has this this little satire about Shakespeare's sister, why Shakespeare's sister wasn't able to write Shakespeare, even though she was just as talented and smart as Shakespeare himself. And so she writes, all the conditions of her life were hostile to the state of mind which is needed to set free whatever's in the brain. Why was that? To write a work of genius is almost always a feat of prodigious difficulty. Everything is against the likelihood that it will come from the writer's mind whole and entire. Generally, material circumstances are against it. Dogs will bark, people will interrupt, money must be made, health will break down. For women, these difficulties were infinitely more formidable. In the first place, to have a room of her own, like that's why her the thing is called Room of One's Own, let alone a quiet room or a soundproof room, was out of the question. Since a woman's money at the time depended on the goodwill of her father, and it was only enough to keep her clothed, she was debarred from such alleviation as came even to Keats or Tennyson or Carlyle, all poor men, but they were able to travel. Right? They would go for a walking tour to France from the separate lodging. So a woman who didn't have the money to have a separate lodging, even if it were miserable enough, sheltered them from the claims and tyrannies of their families. Such material difficulties were formidable. So it's a pithy little quote here, but what she's getting at is like, look, if you're going to be intellectually productive, or you're going to be productive at all, you need a room of your own, free from the harassments of society, right? Free from the barking dogs, from the loud noises that have been bothering poor Zilty. Did we lose Zilty? Josh, where'd Zilty go?
I don't know, but I think the rest of us appreciated that comment. So I'll pass it along to him.
Yeah, pass it along to him. You know, the interruption of people, et cetera, et cetera, where you could just sit and work and let the mind do its thing. So arguably, that's a really important component of privacy, I think, right? Especially as the Rambam and the Ramban seem to suggest, like you have that tsar, right? There's a certain discomfort that a person has when they're always in the public eye. And a degree of privacy allows a person to have like certain basic material conditions that allow them to live a life of yeshiva das from which they could be productive from. You guys agree or thoughts on that? So, I mean, I think that could be one important component of privacy. Thoughts on that? Or, you know, it's like the Rambam talks about good health in Hilchos Deos as like a necessary condition for being productive in Avodas Hashem. So like, so a certain degree of Yeshiva Das, free from just like the intrusions of society, is important to live a productive life of Avodas Hashem or even otherwise. Ned, you have a thought on that? No, so you don't have to get into this deep stuff that Rabbi Lam is suggesting to appreciate that value of privacy, right? But go ahead, Ned.
I just want to point out that the Rabbi Malsa Mor Nevuchim writes about how all of sort of the social laws are there to enable, they're basically secondary.
Exactly. Yeah, go ahead, Ned. Continue.
Yeah, so all of like the mishpatim are there to regulate societal conduct such that any given individual could achieve yidiat Hashem.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, this type of privacy would fit nicely within like those Mor Nebuchim descriptions of Choshen Mishpat principles, 100%. There is one further sense. There's one further sense of privacy that I'll mention now very quickly. So this is a little deeper, I think, a little more philosophical. And I think it gets closer to what Rabbi Lam was saying about the notion of yourself being connected to this privacy. So I want to say this. We can talk more about this. That privacy, so we're all biological creatures, right? You go to the bathroom, you say Asher Yatzar. In a certain sense, we're very just biological beings, like animals. We have a nefesh habehemi, to put it in the way the medieval Rishonim would put it. But we have a capacity to overcome that by constituting our lives not around our biological functions, but by presenting ourselves to the world and to ourselves in a more dignified manner. Part of that is having the ability to control how we present ourselves to the world. Now, let me just give a very crude example, which I think helps motivate the point, right? So everybody has these biological functions, right? So everyone goes to the bathroom, but there's a sense in which that should be closed off from the way you present yourself to others, right? Because you don't need to present yourself as this, I guess, more debased type of creature. You have the capacity to present yourself as a more distinguished, whether it's the way you dress, the way you think, et cetera, et cetera. Does that make sense? Does everybody see that? Now, if a person didn't have spheres of privacy, they wouldn't be able to control how they present themselves to other people. Now, part of the way you think of yourself is filtered through the way other people perceive you. Now, whether it should be that way or shouldn't be that way, it seems to be a fact of human behavior. Right? Just part of the way we think of who we are is filtered through how other people think about us. I mean, would you say that's largely true? Or Rawls, Romy, I don't know if you remember this, Rawls says this in Theory of Justice. In order for a person to have a sense of self-respect, other people must treat them with respect. Because we get our sense of self-respect sometimes when we feed off the way other people think about us. Now, think about the different types of, I'm just going to go over for two more minutes because I don't want this to spill into our next week's shiurim. When we think about the lives we live, by necessity, we have different ways of presenting ourselves to our families, to our classmates, and to our colleagues. What do you guys say that's true? So you could think of like a very distinguished a Rosh Hashiva or something, right? There's a certain way that maybe he's supposed to present himself to his students or present himself in yeshiva, which we might think is very inappropriate if that's the way that he presented himself to his family, to his to his siblings, to his parents and to his children, and maybe even close childhood friends, right? And by necessity, there has to be like a difference between the way you constitute yourself to some and to others. So let me give a quick example here that I put on this source sheet, and I really apologize for taking the extra time. Raman Hilchos Deos Perkei Alachavav. So he says, Snias Gedola Nogin Tamir Chacham Ba'atzman. Lo Yisbazu, Lo Yisgal Roshan, Lo Gufan. Afilu Pshashi Kanis Lebesa Kisei Yetzimura, etc., etc. Part of this is about you have to, like, there's a certain way you're supposed to conduct yourself in public, which by necessity means closing off like aspects of your private life. That's just like one paradigm you could borrow from this Rambam. So I think you could say that without that sphere of privacy, a person wouldn't be able to constitute their life in exactly this way if they didn't have the first say at controlling how they present themselves to others. Okay, that makes sense? I know it's a little abstract, but think about it, right? So the point is that it's, I think you could relate this to what Rabbi Lam is suggesting, that like your self-identity to a certain degree depends on privacy, but only because if you didn't have these different spheres that were closed off to other people, then you wouldn't be able to conduct yourself or to choose how to form who you are in certain relationships. Maybe I should think about that more a little bit also. Let me give just one other example, and then with this I'll close. So anybody had this experience where you go back to a family Shabbos table and say, oh, when you go back to your family, you revert to your old self? Everybody have this experience? Like somebody can be married, right? And they come back to like a family table and they start bickering again, right? That flows from this notion that, right, it's that you're able to, when part of your life is closed off, let's say, from your family. So like when you're with your friends, you could conduct yourself in a different type of way than when you're back at with your family, right? But if like all these things just melded into like the same type of, like everybody saw each other in the same way all the time, then like you would be, you kind of like be stuck. That makes sense? And like you wouldn't be able to mold your personality in that way. Just a thought, I haven't fully formulated it myself also, but I think it's something that a little more philosophical, but not as abstract or impenetrable as the formulation that Ari Lam had. Okay, so let's stop here. I apologize for taking the 6 minutes away. If you have thoughts on this, we could schmooze about, let's schmooze about it for a few minutes in the beginning of Sunday Shir. But the agenda for Sunday is to move on to Makif and Nika. So I'm going to share a new source sheet. I'll link it on the homepage of Canvas. Sunday will be our last year on Zoom, Emir Tzashem, because I'm still quarantined on Sunday. But Tuesday, we're back in full swing in person. But we're still going to have Shir on Sunday, same ways. Shkayach, guys. All right. Take care. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Shkayach, guys.